I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The country's healthcare system is known for being expensive, fragmented, complicated, frustrating, unwieldy, and has not resulted in better outcomes. The Affordable Care Act, which became law 3 years ago, is an ambitious attempt to try to improve the delivery of healthcare and contain costs. While it is still being amended and attacked, the ACA is being rolled out with the immediate goal of getting people to sign up. One of the models that health researchers and policymakers and politicians have pointed to is the Geisinger Health System, which is headquartered in Danville, Pennsylvania. It's an integrated health delivery system that coordinates care through electronic health records. It uses fixed prices for certain surgical procedures rather than the a la carte billing system used by most providers. Most of its doctors are salaried. It has reportedly improved care and improved the bottom line. With so much attention on healthcare, we were interested in these and other innovations at Geisinger, which is why we invited Glenn Steele to join us on Radio Times. He's the president and chief executive officer of Geisinger Health System, a job he's had since 2001. Before that, he was at the University of Chicago as a professor of surgery and vice president for medical affairs. He also spent 24 years as a practicing surgeon in Boston. And Glenn Steele, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's good to be here, Marty.
You know, I was doing a little research on Geisinger. It's actually a system that goes back 100 years.
We're going to declare our 100th anniversary in September 2015, founded by a wonderful lady, Abigail Geisinger, who named it for her husband.
And obviously a very different part of Pennsylvania 100 years ago than it is today, and a very different kind of health system then and now.
It's a different part of Pennsylvania now.
Indeed. And this is an integrated system. What does that mean?
Well, we have the hospitals that you would recognize as specialty hospitals, high anxiety, high stress, excellent specialty and subspecialty, and they're the hubs. And then we have hospitals that are outlying in a number of our areas where we have community practice sites for hospitalized care, but probably less severe, less comorbid care, less high anxiety. We have 70 physical sites spread over 42 counties. And then the really interesting aspect of the organization is that we have an insurance company as part of it as well.
And why is that important?
Well, you know, the sweet spot between taking care of patients through our provider system and paying for that care through the insurance system really is the engine of innovation. That's what allows us to change incentives to fundamentally have a different relationship between payer and provider.
And we're talking about 21,000 employees that are employed by the Geisinger.
Yeah, we've gotten big and complex. Hopefully not too bureaucratic.
Well, you were also telling us before going on the air that Geisinger experienced a near-death experience.
Well, we had a 3.5-year full asset merger with Hershey Penn State, and it was a good strategy. I think it was well intended, and it didn't work. And at least for the second half of that 3.5 years, I think both partners were thinking about one thing, and that was divorce. And both partners have done very well coming out of that. But it was a perfect time for me to join the organization because it was about as low in morale as you could be. So there was nowhere to go but up.
So it was a good divorce?
It was a divorce.
It was a divorce. I guess they're never good divorces. But what about the patients? What are the range of patients that Geisinger deals with?
Well, we have in our central region, which is probably about 5 or 6 counties around Danville, where the original Abigail Hospital was founded, Geisinger Medical Center. We have some of the oldest, sickest, and poorest demography outside the Deep South. We also have one of the most stable demographies. I mean, people, it's not like inner city. People are not moving. I mean, if they're born there, there's a good chance they'll be there throughout their lives. I think about 15% of our patients are 3-generation patients. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
And that gives us certain advantages that we'll talk about later, I'm sure, in terms of innovating care and then following what happens to patients, not just over 30 days or 3 months, but actually over generations. The other part of the demography is post-industrial. So we're talking Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, and that has a different set of challenges. A lot of diversity, much more diversity than in the central part. fairly extensive population growth in Monroe and Pike and Wayne because of out-migration from New York. What we don't have is a mainline or a Philadelphia-type demography.
Not an urban demography.
Correct.
Or suburban demography, right. I found it interesting.
Now, we're not really rural. My definition of rural, if people are jogging, it's generally not rural. And people jog.
That's your definition
of
rural?
And people jog in our area. They don't get shot or hit by pickup trucks.
That is good to know. What I also found interesting is that I guess most of the doctors at Geisinger are salaried. Why is that important and how does that work?
We have about 1,100 employed docs. And it doesn't matter whether they're orthopedists or brain surgeons or primary care physicians that are out in these community sites. That is the core of our doctor or provider group. We also have a huge number of physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and they are also very, very important in our caregiving, and they are salaried. The reason it's important is we can change the incentives. We can basically 20% of our total cash compensation for our salaried physicians is based on something other than the number of patients they see or their panel size or so-called RVUs. So we can move things away from units of work, which is the dominant way people get paid now in medicine, to something else. And that something else is, most of what we're innovating towards.
And this is getting away from that fee-for-service.
You've got it.
The doctor gets paid for every service that he or she provides.
You've got it. Now we're often characterized as the Pennsylvania version of Kaiser Permanente,
right.
But we're very different than KP. We deal with a huge number of non-employed, non-Geisinger docs in jointly caring for patients. Our electronic record, for instance, is out in 3,000 non-Geisinger doctor's offices with web-based portal. All of our hospitals are open staff, which means that patients can be cared for there by Geisinger docs and non-Geisinger docs. And probably 90% of the care that's given in Scranton and probably 30% mm-hmm. of the care that's given in our hospital in Wilkes-Barre is given by non-Geisinger physicians. So we're much more heterogeneous than Kaiser Permanente.
But what's interesting are these salaried positions, especially salaried physicians. And I'm just curious, what is, for instance, a GP, what is a typical salary for a general practitioner?
$240,000 a year. That's not bad, is
that's
it?
That's a pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good salary.
You bet. That's why we're able to recruit and retain some of the best and brightest primary care physicians, and it's not just the salary that draws them to Danville.
Yeah.
It's the ability to be in our best and most innovative service line. Community practice is without a doubt one of the most important innovators throughout our entire system. And so it's a combination of total cash comp, which is very competitive,
yes,
and making a difference, which turns people on.
I'm curious about then what would a surgeon, a salaried surgeon, what would they make by way of comparison?
We bench this to standards that are put out by a number of different groups, and AAMC, that's the Association of Academic Medical Colleges, is one of the benches we use, and we're up between 80th and 90th percentile for AAMC. And as you might imagine, the cost of living in our area is lower than in a lot of areas. We're recruiting from all over the country, but it's the combination of total cash comp, which is 80th to 90th percentile, mm-hmm. for a given specialty, and the fact that we can do cool stuff.
Well, do you think that changes then doctoring or even the doctor-patient relationship? If a doctor is salaried, does that change the way they deliver their care?
I don't think it changes the doctor-patient relationship necessarily. A huge number – I was a practicing physician, as you said in the intro, for over 20 years, and I was paid fee-for-service. Mm-hmm. I think great docs are committed and have good patient relationships or don't. But it changes what, as an institution, we can focus on. If we're focusing on creating a better outcome for type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm. over a period of time, and we can pay for that as opposed to the number of diabetic patients we see or the number of of blood tests that we get looking at A1C, which is a control of diabetes, it does make a difference.
Mm. I'm curious about whether a fee-for-service system, though, does end up rewarding mistakes. Because if you're getting paid for every service that you provide, not that people would willingly make mistakes, but you end up getting paid for the mistakes that you might have made.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Marty.
And how
people
much
don't make mistakes. I mean, there's not a single doc that that I've ever been exposed to in my long career where people willingly intentionally make mistakes. But the fact is that it's a perverse way of paying
the fee for service.
Exactly.
I mean, and if you could make
which is why we innovated away from that.
Right. And do you think that's a model that could be used for other parts of the country or other parts of the healthcare system?
Absolutely. It was used back in the late 80s and 90s, remember?
HMOs? No.
Capitation. Remember capitation?
I do.
That ugly word?
Yeah. But is it not an ugly word anymore?
I think it's less ugly now because we have more metrics where we can prove to ourselves and make sure that regular human beings out there understand that we're not winning financially by withholding care. That was the fear back in the day. And I believe we have metrics for managing disease now where we can actually guard against that.
I ran across a quote from you about these salaried positions. You said, "I don't want family docs setting up radiology clinics."
Right.
Why not?
Because of two reasons. Number one, I think radiologists probably have better training in terms of understanding indications and interpreting their tests than folks who are trained in a different mode. And number two, most of the incentive for these ancillary tests is to try to keep the practice afloat. And, you always worry about, driving the tests as opposed to making absolutely certain that the tests make a difference for patient care.
And we're almost up in a break here, but we have done many, many shows about our healthcare system, and we always hear from general practitioners, internists, just about they feel like they're on the front line, their job is really hard, and they feel as if they are not being compensated adequately for what they provide.
And they're right. And they're right. And we have the ability within our system to redistribute. I know redistribution is really a bad word, but you got to call it what it is. We basically have orthopedists who agree when they come to our system that they're happy with 80th to 90th percentile AAMC benchmark. Now, if they were somewhere else working in a different system, they could probably make more. But they agree to be in our system, and a lot of that excess moves over to the PCPs.
And that's Glenn Steele, our guest today in Radio Times. He's a surgeon, also chief executive officer, call that CEO, and president of Geisinger Health System, which is located in Danville, Pennsylvania. And it's been hailed as a model for how to deliver an integrated healthcare system. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY comes from Delaware Valley College. Delaware Valley College offers a Master of Arts in Policy Studies that prepares students to take leadership roles in developing policies to address important issues impacting our communities. Students can choose from food and agriculture, sustainability and environment, or community and international development. More information about a Master of Arts in Policy Studies is available online at delval.edu/grad.
Next time in Studio 360, the uncanny power of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial.
David C. Fell.
Anyone can relate to a name. If you've given birth to a child, if you've held a baby in your arms, if you've baptized someone and say, "I name you," this wall will break your heart.
Kenneth J. Powles.
Next time in Studio 360's American Icons from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Exit Zero International Jazz Festival in Cape May, New Jersey, November 8th through 10th. The Cape May Convention Hall and six club venues will feature jazz performances throughout the weekend, such as Diane Reeves, November 8th, and Eddie Palmieri, November 10th. Other festival highlights include wine tastings and Meet the Artist events. Congress Hall in Cape May is the official festival hotel. For tickets, reservations, and other festival details, exit0jazzfest.com or 609-849-9202.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The Geisinger Health System, which is located in Danville, Pennsylvania, has been held up as a model for the country with its integrated health delivery program that provides better care at lower costs. We're talking about how they do it and whether it can be replicated. And again, our guest is Glenn Steele, president and CEO of Geisinger. He worked for many years as a surgeon in Boston, also previously was affiliated with the University of Chicago's Pritzker School of Medicine. Any questions or comments that you might have about the system, and we are talking systems here, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from the healthcare providers in our audience, also patients as well, and you can also send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org. Something you were saying during the break, Lynn, is about just the importance of those frontline general practitioners in terms of not just delivering care, but also as a way of holding down costs.
You know, if you look at where most of the cost is in healthcare, it's individuals who are about my age with multiple chronic diseases, and it's the suboptimal care of those chronic diseases that most often leads to an emergency room visit on a Friday evening, which then most often leads to a hospitalization. And if you have multiple hospitalizations, your chance of having an issue, an additional issue, goes way up. And what we found is that if we focus on keeping our diabetics in really great shape, keeping our congestive failure patients in great shape, hypertension, reactive depression, there's a dramatic decrease in hospitalization per thousand and rehospitalization, which benefits the patients and goes directly to the bottom line of our insurance company because the total cost of care goes down. Within our system, we can redistribute that gain to the people who actually deserve it. And we can give some of that gain back in lowering our premium prices to the small businesses where we're selling commercial premium.
You have an electronic medical system, and there have been many complaints about the imposition or the institution of e-records for doctors. Again, some of these frontline docs complaining how hard it is to take all those folders and put all that information online. You just rolled your eyes at me. So you know how difficult it is to create an electronic medical system. But I'm assuming if it works and the parts are talking to each other, there are benefits. Yes? Hopefully?
We couldn't do what we do without having an electronic system, and it's not only the electronic system on the provider side, but it's the ability on the insurance side to get information to the doctors in ways that they can use it immediately. You have to have almost real-time feedback in order for the doctors to change how they care for a patient sitting in front of them or a patient's family sitting in front of them. 6 months after the fact, chart reviews, analyses of what's in the chart, reconciliation 6 to 12 months afterwards doesn't do the doc who's trying to benefit the patient sitting in front of them any good at all. So it's critical for us. It's aggravating, but it's critical.
Why is it aggravating?
Well, because, you know, most of the time, particularly when you start with the electronic system, it's clunky. And what we've found, we've been electronic since 1995, so we're almost 19 years into it. We've found that when you put an electronic system in, you actually have to change almost the entire pattern of the caregiving. You don't just put it in. I mean, I'll give you a great example. When you first put it into your doctor's offices, if your terminal is sitting on the wrong side of the office and the doctor's back is to the patient, that's not a good thing. So that's just one small example of how the entire pattern of care has to be kind of re-engineered.
Do patients have access to those e-records, their own e-records?
Yeah, we started a kind of an interesting beta test about 2 years ago with the BI Deaconess in Boston and with Harborview in Washington State. And it's called Open Notes. And we opened up all of our doctor's progress notes to our patients who wanted it. And the sky did not fall. The world did not end.
Was that the fear?
We didn't have teams of lawyers arriving outside of our system, and we've now opened it up throughout our entire practice, including our residents. So the predicate is patients will do better if they really understand what's going on. And doctors will do better if they know whether their patients understand what's going on or not. And it's been extraordinarily interesting to see what's happened. Medication adherence, which is one big problem in treating chronic disease, is what we're looking at right now. 50% of the time when a doc gives a patient a prescription for chronic disease management, it never gets filled. Right. Or the pills never get taken. Isn't that amazing?
This is the compliance.
And if you
issue,
don't,
right?
Yeah, if you don't, it's adherence. If you don't know that as a doc, you're kidding yourself, thinking that you've got an optimal relationship going.
Well, what you're talking about, then I do want to get to our cause. What you're talking about is just the importance of people talking to each other, sharing information.
It's a fundamentally different relationship, we believe, between a patient and a doctor. It's a much more activated patient. And even the insurance member. I mean, if the insurance member is healthy, you want to keep that insurance member healthy. And we think that it's got to be a huge activation and a distribution of the data out towards where the patient actually is, not waiting for the patient to come into the hospital or the doctor's office.
But it sounds like, does it encourage doctors and healthcare people to talk to each other and to share information as well? I mean,
it does.
Hear about the kind of silos.
It does. And one of the fears before we did the beta test was it'll disrupt the day. It'll disrupt the doctor's already busy day or the nurse's already busy day. And there are ways of batching the interactions and stratifying them depending upon whether they're critical interactions or they can wait, where it does not disrupt the day. It actually helps the relationship.
Hmm. That's Glenn Steele, our guest today on Radio Times. He's a surgeon, had worked for a number of years in the Boston area, was also a professor of surgery at the University of Chicago's Pritzker School of Medicine. And since 2001, he's been the president and chief executive officer of Geisinger Health System, which is located in the middle of Pennsylvania in the Danville area. And again, it's been a model cited by policymakers, politicians, health researchers as a model of an integrated health delivery system that saves money and provides better care, and something to think about as we wrestle with the Affordable Care Act. Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Cynthia from Westchester to join us. Cynthia, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Thank you for this important conversation.
Thanks.
Dr. Steele, the way you've communicated your vision makes me want to join your team. That's an awesome conversation. My question, though, really, is how do you manage patients' expectation? I guess my understanding is that we spend a lot of money at either end-of-life care or unnecessary testing, and we as patients come in with these high expectations that may be very costly. And so my question is, how do you manage that and integrating that into your healthcare system?
Cynthia, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great question. Our bet is that a long-term relationship between a patient or a patient's family and a healthcare provider is very beneficial. I'm not implying that the provider can kind of manipulate, but the fact of the matter is that so many of folks, particularly at the end of life, have in the past felt as if they have to come into the hospital. Otherwise, their loved one would be abandoned. And if there are ways of making sure, if there's really nothing to be done, that the individual who is going to be passing is not abandoned, and there are ways of really providing the kind of support. And I'm not just talking about family support. I'm talking about professional support in the home. That's a reasonable way of managing things. I don't think you can pull that off without having a long-term relationship with a caregiver. It doesn't always have to be a PCP. It can be a specialist or what have you. But more often than not, in our system, it's the community practitioners that are out living in the communities that have those have the possibility of that kind of relationship. So that's one example.
Well, and it's an interesting one. And Cynthia, thanks for the call. As you said at the top of the hour, this is a population or a community that sort of stays put. And I think in other parts of the country, probably many urban areas, it's a very mobile population.
Marty, that's a great point. And we do have an advantage because so many of our families are multi-generational staying put. So we have a lot more support, I believe. And our doctors stay put as well, which is kind of remarkable. Yeah. So it would be different in urban settings with much more fluidity.
What about drugs and pharmacies? Is that sort of part of this integrated system? Are there pharmacies where people can get medications for lesser costs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, we a number of years ago achieved probably almost 85 to 90% generic, which is a big deal. So that saves a huge amount of money. Secondly, we do a huge amount of mail order, which actually has a much better metric in terms of verifying that people get what you think they're getting, and then you can find out whether they actually got their prescription. I mean, you start with here's a prescription, now you can't watch them take the pill, but maybe that'll happen later, but not during my lifetime. And then because we're so big and we have so much of a pharmacy buy throughout our entire system, we get really good prices.
Wow. Let me see what Dr. Lim from looks like Lower Merion has to say. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I am interested in chronic care, such as diabetes, hypertension, and so on. Now, in chronic care, I think we will probably all agree that it takes a lot of time to educate the patient, to explain the pathology and the complications of inadequate care and medications that are so complicated and do different things. And it takes time to educate the patient, which is necessary in order to get compliance and to have a good outcome.
Sure.
Right? We
yes.
all agreed on that.
Yes, indeed.
Now, what I'm interested to know is how Geisinger does it to get the outcomes that they do, and how do they support the primary care physician in that? Because I do not expect the primary care physician to be able to do all that himself or herself. There's only 24 hours in a day
sure.
for all of us.
It's
so what is the ratio of support staff you give to your PCPs in order to get those outcomes that you do?
Thanks for the call. Yes, go ahead.
Well, as I said before, we couldn't actually do what we've done for chronic disease management optimization without having real-time data fed back from both the insurance company as well as from the provider side. So the first thing that happens is the data comes back in usable form, and we know which patients are the most likely to be sick and high utilizers from year to year. That's number one. Number two, we re-engineer the care. We don't just ask our primary care physicians to work harder or work longer. We re-engineer the care. So let me give you an example. We have nurses that are paid for by our insurance company that actually are part of the primary care practice, and they're assigned to care for 125 to 150 of the sickest patients in that practice. So they are the concierge care for the sickest, not the richest. And everything that happens to those patients basically has to go through that nurse practitioner. That frees up a huge amount of time for consultation and for leadership by the PCP in that practice. Now, the consequence of that is decreased hospitalization, decreased rehospitalization, and that benefit, obviously, on the quality side, goes to the people with multiple chronic diseases, who avoid these multiple trips through the emergency room into the hospital. The benefit financially goes to our insurance company because the total cost of care goes down, and we can redistribute a lot of that value to the people that we think deserve it. So you're absolutely right. It's quite complex, and it's really a redesign of the pattern of care.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. I mean, it sounds like chronic care and also elderly patients, that's where a lot of the money is spent and the time is spent.
Absolutely. No question about it.
And that's where, I mean, if we're going to figure out how to fix our entire system across the country, we have to figure out how to deal with these patients and these conditions, it seems.
Absolutely.
One of the things that, that Geisinger does, which is interesting, which is for certain, sounds like surgeries or certain care, it's just a lump sum is paid rather than, as we were talking about earlier, this kind of fee for service. I guess if someone got a heart attack, Geisinger would get paid a certain amount of money to try to get them back to health again. Do I have that right?
Yeah, we have about, it's probably over a dozen hospital-based episodes of care that we've redesigned. And between us as provider and us as payer, we have negotiated a single price and for the entire episode. It's not a separate price for the doctors and a separate price for the x-rays and a separate price for the hospitalization. What we've also negotiated is that we will care for any complications that occur during that or after that treatment with the same price. So we're basically taking financial risk for decreasing complications to an absolute minimum and building it into the initial price. Now, that's just between us as providers and us as payers. We have other payers, Highmark, Capital Blue Cross, Northeast Blue Cross, Coventry, now Aetna, and we don't have that arrangement with them because they've never asked for it.
Oh, that's interesting. But what that means is that if someone is readmitted, you don't get paid extra for that. I mean, that's included in this bulk price.
That's exactly right.
And the idea is to try to keep people out of the hospital, and that gets us
No, the idea is that we're reengineering care to minimize complications, and we're taking financial risk that we can do that.
You talked about compliance earlier. I mean, that also seems like it's key to keeping people healthy, obviously, and also keeping them out of expensive hospital care.
What do you mean by compliance,
well,
Marty?
Well, compliance either. Let's say someone has a surgery. They're sent home and they're told, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to take your pills, you need to, you know, stop smoking, all this kind of stuff that can send someone back into the hospital.
Yeah, I mean, I think that falls into the category of really activating the patients so they become partners. And that's not easy to do, and it's not easy across the board. I think, again, because of our demography, because of the fact people are stable, because of the fact that they're living in communities where we have community practitioners, it's easier for us to achieve than if we were in a fluid big city milieu.
Mm. About a minute before our second break here, but I mean, it changes hard, yes? I mean, even in a place where it's not easy to change, even if what you're changing to is probably going to be a better system.
Well, but, you know, change has really been, I mean, it's been our religion up there. And, you know, when you start from a really low baseline, you know, coming off of a unsuccessful strategy, you got to change. And so it was just how we changed. And we've tried to keep it up. What's really hard is when you change and you do innovation to keep innovation going. Now, that's really hard.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation again. Glenn Steele is our guest, President, CEO of Geisinger Health System. He has worked for many years as a surgeon, and we invited him to join us at AM Radio Times to tell us how they do things at Geisinger. Geisinger has been cited as a model for how we could do better health care in the system, or in this country, I should say. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.com. We'll be right back.
The Hill School supports WHYY. A private co-educational boarding school located in Pottstown, the Hill School provides students in grades 9 through 12 with the essentials for college, careers, and life in a diverse learning and living community. Hill students come from across the country and around the world. They are athletes, artists, friends, classmates, and future leaders. An open house is Saturday, October 26th at 9:30 a.m. Information available at 610-326-1000 or online at thehill.org. Graham Nash has written a new memoir. He co-founded the British band The Hollies, which had hits like Bus Stop and Look Through Any Window. He left The Hollies to co-found Crosby, Stills & Nash. They're still performing together. Graham Nash on The Next Fresh Air. Join us. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
So is eating lox and going to summer camp enough to call yourself a Jew?
I'm just as likely to read the story of the Tower of Babel in the Bible as I am to read a story by Isaac Babel and get as much inspiration from one as I do from the other.
Millennials who call themselves secular Jews kick off our series, Young Nation Under God. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. The Geisinger Health System has been widely cited by politicians and policymakers and health researchers as a very good example of a fully integrated health delivery model that provides better care while saving money. We're talking with surgeon and CEO Glenn Steele about Geisinger, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We actually had an emailer. This is Andy from Gloucester County. Where does EMS fit into the program? He's an EMS and he is in EMS and says he transports patients to the most expensive place to obtain care.
We're designed as a hub and spoke. And when you look at a stroke, when you look at acute myocardial infarction, heart attack, when you look at high risk deliveries, we have six helicopters bringing folks in, we really only want to bring them in if they have to come in. Otherwise, they can get great care out in a number of the hospitals that we use or that are part of the Geisinger system. So Life Flight is a big deal with us. EMS is a big deal with us. In our area, as compared to Philadelphia, there's a lot of consolidation going on. For instance, in the Northeast now, there are really two systems. One is CHS, which is a for-profit out of Brentwood. One is Geisinger.
Hmm.
So, if you're transporting patients, you got two choices. So that probably makes it a little bit easier.
One of the reasons we wanted to have you on is because of the Affordable Care Act and the efforts to improve the system. Of course, they've had a problem with the computers going up and other issues as well. But it also has included, has dealt with things like pre-existing conditions and I think some of these preventive issues as well. Is Geisinger a model that could be used in other parts of the country?
We think it is, but it has to be proven. Obviously, we've talked a lot earlier about what's special about our structure, what's special about the people that we take care of, our employment model, what have you. And that's still unusual. If you look at healthcare delivery across the country, we're unusual.
Right.
But there are more and more people who have come to us, I call it Shangri-La, have come to us and have been intrigued and wonder if one or another of what we really think are themes could be generalized. And so we are now in five states. A lot of people don't know that. We're in Maine, we're in New Jersey, we're in Delaware, we're in West Virginia. And in all of those non-Pennsylvania settings, we're working with non-Geisinger providers who are trying to do some of the stuff that we do and have a special relationship between a payer, which is our payer, and their providers. We work with lots of providers in Pennsylvania where we have no intention of bringing our own employed group. An example would be Lancaster, Reading, down into Dauphin County. We believe we're seeing some of the same results in terms of chronic disease care optimization, in terms of kind of re-engineering hospital-based care that we're seeing even in our core with our employed physicians. It's early yet, but we think some of what we're doing is scalable.
And I guess salaried physicians or salaried staff is one example. The idea of looking at fee-for-service, other sort of more integrated approaches to healthcare.
Well, we already know that since 50% of our Geisinger Insurance members are taken care of by non-Geisinger, non-employed, we already know that our version of advanced medical home, that is a fundamentally different way of taking care of chronic disease, can be taken out to non-employed. it has to be incented differently. It has to be supported differently, but it is doable, particularly in the larger groups. Now, in some of the smaller groups where Geisinger Insurance is just a very minor part of the revenue stream, it's not going to work.
Let me get back to our callers. Looks like we have Dan from Cherry Hill joining us on Radio Times. Dan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi there. I'm a physician, a family physician, who did graduate work in nutrition before I went into practice. And I applaud your guest for all the improvements he's made in the medical system. But as we've learned in medical school, the major improvements in health and therefore health costs don't come from us physicians or even from the medical system, but come from preventive approaches that usually involve public health. And we're tinkering right now with the system. We'll get immediate savings every time we do something about that. But if we continue to get more and more unhealthy people and we continue to have a more and more unhealthy lifestyle, those savings will be eaten up in the not-too-distant future, and we'll end up being the same place we are now and worse.
Oh, Dan, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Hard to argue with that, is it?
No, I agree. I mean, I can only do what, you know, what's in my responsibility portfolio, Dan, and I agree with you completely. You know, the single biggest issue right now, I mean, it used to be infectious disease. Right now it's obesity. Mm-hmm. You know, we try to do what we can in our area. We're a huge employer. We make a difference well beyond our health care provision and health care insurance. And we, you know, we're in the schools. We're, you know, we try to get into the communities and what have you. But I focus on what I can make a difference on, and that you're talking about a big societal issue. And I agree with you completely.
Dan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. What do you think about the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I think that the status quo prior to it was unacceptable, and I've not heard an alternative. I think it's screwed up. I hope it'll be fixed. You know, it's typical of our democracy and sausage making in legislation. But I think it has a lot of good stuff buried in it. And I think when we look back at this particular time, we will understand that we're in the middle of a great transformation in our health care delivery and our health care payment.
And, I mean, some have said we should have a single payer, Medicare for all. I mean, are those things that we could borrow from, you think, to improve the system?
You know, it depends on what single payer means. There are some countries that have single payer and still have a market.
Right.
And then there are other definitions of single payer where there's no market. I believe in market competition and believe that the vitality of the commercial part of what we're dealing with now and the efficiency of change in our commercial payer may be more efficient than what we're seeing in government.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have Judy from Lansdowne. Judy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I live in Philadelphia area in Lansdowne, but I'm from Danville, and my first job was at Geisinger in the late 80s, and my parents still live there. They are in their early 80s. They've been patients of the same primary care doctor since the mid-80s, and we've seen a lot of changes, but I feel like they're in pretty good shape compared to what I see here. I'm a nurse in this area, and I just wanted, it was just nice to hear, to turn on the radio and hear about Geisinger and Danville. So.
You want a job, Judy?
You can live near your parents.
I'd love to go back and work there. Someday I probably will, I hope.
Well, we're always hiring.
Well, that's interesting.
Judy, I know. I miss it.
Well, I appreciate the call. And she sort of underscores a bit of a theme that we've had during this hour, which is that her parents have had the same doctor for decades now.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is about consistency of care. It's about relationship, as we've been talking about earlier.
Yeah. Again, I think it's a perfect example of one of our advantages. If you've got great technology, and if you've got a way of getting new knowledge to your doctors and your patients, and activated patients are a huge part of the solution, you still have to have a relationship. I believe the relationships are incredibly important, and you know, it's great to hear that Judy's parents have the same doc for 20 years. It's great.
Judy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And are you still hiring? Are you still always looking for staff?
Yeah. Yeah. 13 years ago, we were a little over 7,000. We're now around 21,000. Wow. I mean, one of the great personal areas of anxiety is when you get that large and that complex, are you still going to be focused on your mission? And it's an interesting challenge.
Well, it does seem that the system that we have in this country is probably the most complicated, convoluted way of delivering health care. Do you see it that way?
Well, it's certainly better than our legislative system.
But it comes out of our legislative system in many ways.
Well, you know, it's 1/6 of our economy, right? And it's also, I think most of us now believe that health care is a right. And I have a daughter who's a veterinarian. She went to Penn Vet, and she reminds me that Penn Vet was much more selective than medical school. But veterinarians are taught about herd, and the health of the herd is important. You've got to have the entire population healthy for all of us to be maximized. And if you don't do that, you're hurting individuals. And that comes into the government. That's a social issue. What Dan was talking about was a social issue. So that's why it's complex.
Let me see what looks like Esther from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Esther, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. I'd like to know how the system deals with mental health and dentistry, both of which are very underfunded in most insurance things.
Esther, I appreciate the call. Go ahead.
Yeah, we first of all, on the provider side, we have a superb group of dentists, both taking care of adults as well as pediatric dentistry. As you may or may not know, pediatric dentistry is a real problem, a huge problem in terms of resource, getting the dentist there, and also getting the reimbursement. And we've just recently, as of March, gone into Medicaid managed care. Medicaid fee-for-service went away in Pennsylvania. We have 116,000 Medicaid members. And the big issue there is exactly what Esther was talking about, dental and behavior. The state has done what's called carve out behavioral medicine. So we are the responsibility for doing the behavioral stuff, the emotional stuff, psychological, psychiatric stuff is taken away from us, if you can believe that, and given to a separate company, which makes no sense at all. Now, we try to coordinate with that. It's a good company. It's run out of UPMC Insurance. Very good company, right. But it makes no sense at all. The dental we feel pretty good about because we take responsibility for that on the provider side, and we have a separate insurance product that comes through our insurance company. But the behavioral is still a big problem. That's We've right. got great psychologists and psychiatrists, but the insurance capabilities are really, for political reasons, they're carved out, which makes it's just ridiculous.
Well, Esther, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, but that underscores this sort of mind-body dichotomy, that somehow the yeah. body is treated one way and the mind is this thing that's on our shoulders here.
And if you have, it's interesting, if you have a chronic disease, whether it's diabetes or heart disease or hypertension, and on top of that you have reactive depression or some, it magnifies the other problems. Mm-hmm. So they should be pushed together. And we're working on that in terms of our advocacy, being able to be given responsibility for the entire patient.
If you could give President Obama advice about the Affordable Care Act, what would that be?
Get the exchanges working as soon as possible.
Well, you've had experience with e-records and with I guess digitizing records. Do you have any sympathy for what seem to be some, I don't know if they're glitches or if they're systemic problems in some of this rollout?
Oh, it's a huge challenge. A huge challenge
because getting people into the system is
well the number of systems that have to talk to each other in order to actually get the individual who's going online to to be able to choose an appropriate product, and then to define whether or not that person actually is entitled to a subsidy. It's an immense set of interconnections, and then the volume of people coming on is huge. I mean, it was an expected catastrophe. Will it work? I hope so. We've set up our own private system, and it's working well, but it doesn't have near the volume that the public system has. Will it eventually be an interesting new way to think about health care and think about health care insurance? I think it will. I think it will, but it's going to take a while, and it's got to be straightened out soon.
But it seems that we have to figure out how to get uninsured people insured. I mean, that's such an important part of the system.
I think I can make an argument in two categories for that. Well, number one, the ethics. I mean, and everybody has a different value system, but for me, it's unethical not to have people in this country insured. The other argument is the business argument. If there is a significant number of uninsured, they're going to get care anyway. But it's going to be inefficient care. It's often bad care. And guess who pays for it? We pay for it anyway. So I think both arguments are pretty straightforward.
Just a quick follow-up there, though. But you can't use the emergency room if you've got cancer. I mean, you know what I mean?
You don't want to use the emergency room for anything except for emergencies. You can say that, but you've got to provide alternatives. I mean, one of the most important things for our Medicaid managed care responsibility is to make certain that when we're dealing with federally qualified health centers, when we're dealing with alternatives to emergency room, people know where they are, that they're convenient, and they feel good about going there. Rather, they should save the emergency room for a true emergency.
Well, on that note, Glenn Steele, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. President and CEO of the Geisinger Health System, and has worked many years as a surgeon. And we invited him to join us on Radio Times, part of an ongoing conversation we've been having about our country's healthcare system. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscone. Do stay with us for Hour 2. We'll be right back.